Shane Jones is in for a corridor today. Hey, Shane, I hope you've got some good news for us all.
Hey, mihi kia tatu. Sadly, I am not over there striding across the world's major stages, including the United Nations, where Winston is today.
Okay, well, we can get a bit of a catch-up. Have you achieved your KPIs this week?
Yes. Well, this KPI business, it's something that is going to be very useful as a tool of measurement, but you know as well as I do, politics is full of so much randomness.
I was reading a piece that says that the Prime Minister is full of corporate speak, including KPIs and the like, which, for those who don't know, means key performance indicators.
Performance indicators.
How are you finding this? Do you think he's trying to run the country like a corporation?
No, we've inherited a situation where the bureaucracy is looking for a very lucid sense of direction, because they themselves have become very risk-averse, and that's often related to politicians being unwilling to make decisions and just fall back on process. It's been happening for a while now, but as you know, Winston and I, we're all about decisions, and my whole approach is that, right, let's make a decision, done, and gather the best people you can around it to make the best of the best fist that you can out of that decision. And KPIs, if used very skillfully, will give a clear sense of what each government department has to deliver. And there's 36 odd outcomes that we are hoping to achieve over the next 90 odd days. Several of them relate to me. I was up at Marsden Point Refinery. We've got to undertake a report and establish what's the future of the refinery in terms of can it fulfill refinery duties again. And another one is the creation of the Provincial Growth Fund, otherwise now known as the Regional Infrastructure Fund, RIF, and that's $1.2 billion. So, yeah, each of us have specific results we have to achieve, quite apart from running the ship in the absence of those 36 outcomes in any event.
When I, well, just through the media, looked at them, they were a bit short on details, so they just, at the time, seemed a bit like a wish list. Just staying for a moment with refineries, which is a big cope-upper for you. I notice you've been in Dunedin inspecting fuel storage capability, as I think you might have been there yesterday. And what chance of the refinery being opened? What have you found when you investigated the potential there?
Well, 160-odd million has already been chewed through as they've decommissioned the refinery, but much of it is still standing in place. Some of it goes back to the 1960s. It's evident to me. I don't want to preempt the report, but there's a substantial amount of pute would be needed in order to recreate it. But as they pointed out to me, fuel types are changing as we move towards a blend of biofuel. By that I mean fuel types made out of the woody biomass, i.e. pine trees and whatnot, out of the ngahere. There was a person who got in contact with me who are exploring whether or not we could create a wind farm off the east coast of Paitokerau, and whether or not that power would then connect with the refinery. So, you know, we shouldn't underestimate how the market or how entrepreneurs are out there searching for different ways to make a buck out of the decarbonisation journey. Obviously, the CEO and the operations manager up at the refinery are really keen to play a role in ensuring that we can store more fuel in New Zealand. The various oil companies, they're just working through what it's going to cost with the Crown to boost our storage capacity. From time to time, it drops down to 5 to 6 days fuel in the country, so that's grossly unsatisfactory, and we're keen to have at least 20 days. Although I've been encouraged by a host of others to go to 40 days. Anyway, these things we're backing through at the moment.
Tēnā koe, Shane. Look, Shane, I like you. I don't mind admitting that publicly. In fact, we could even say that I love you, Shane Jones. But, you know, mate, you're a bit hard to read sometimes. And there are many, you describe yourself as a garden variety politician. But yet we seem to, you seem to be an advocate for issues that many sense are disadvantaging Māori. How are you getting on, you know, when you sort of advocate in that way? And how does it affect your interpersonal relationships with your own people, your own hapu, your own iwi?
Yeah, so I was in Rotorua over the weekend. There's hundreds of people at the Mātātua meeting house, and it was a celebration of the, 7 or 8 million that was allocated to do up the marae in Waimana, Ruatahuna, and the great Tūhoe meeting house in Rotorua, carved by the inimitable John Paiapa, I think the last whare whakaero that he did. So that was opened in the very late 1970s. And look, people realise that both Winston and I were a little bit like Joseph in a sort of multicoloured coat in the Bible. We not only have to appeal to different constituencies, but we're professional politicians. We're not sort of embracing in some sort of stubborn and inflexible way just one liturgy. Yes, there are some things that have upset a lot of our hapu and iwi, not the least of which is the referendums that have been restored in order for the Māori seats to remain in local government. And you could argue that, well, why do you need that? Because the people making the decision are locally elected anyhow. But we should never lose sight of the fact that Nanaia and Jacinda pulled a very cunning stroke. They did not campaign in 2020 on enabling councils to create Māori seats without a referendum. They were conspicuously silent on that. And we had no idea during that campaign that Nanaia and Jacinda were going to simply pass a law in the dead of night allowing councils to enjoy that right to create the seats. If they wanted those seats to endure, they should have gone and campaigned on it. And that level of furtiveness has come back to haunt them, and you've had the parties of the right, particularly the ACT Party, drive incessantly to restore that right of a referendum. So people tend to forget that it was an act, it was a clandestine act that actually gave councils the ability to make those changes. It did not go through the withering fire of an election campaign. But, yep, you know, the reality is that Labor had all the power then, and I can't deny the fact it was a stupendously successful result in 2020 for Jacinda. But sadly, she got that one wrong.
You don't favour Māori wards, obviously. I mean, it's a bit rich to be saying it.
People didn't campaign on it.
I mean, you know, is this so we'll reinstate the ability to put a referendum in to deny councils to establish Māori wards as a backlash to their non-notification?
I think I claim that given the strength of the Māori population in Taitokiro, there's every reason that those wards, subject to our people getting out to vote, will continue. And obviously my younger brother's on one for the regional council, my son Grenitali, he stood. So, I mean, I encourage that level of democracy. But, hey, when you create a coalition government, mate, that's just the lie of the land. You cobble together various areas that you're passionate about and others that you realise that this is necessary to sustain a government, because what is of overarching importance is the development of our economy and the strengthening of our nation. And we've got to grow the economy, because at the moment we're struggling to pay school teachers, nurses. I'll certainly meet the aspirations on police and build on RNA Hospital and the 7 or 8 other hospitals. And I know it all sounds a bit as if I'm copping out to your listeners quoting these things, but that's what makes the difference in the end as to whether or not people want to continue to live in this country, or do we all go to Australia and the population gets replaced by migrants and we wake up in 50 years and gone as the Māori chief and the descendants of Queen Victoria, and we're a whole different country populated by another part of the world.
Well, it feels as though that could be what's happening. We know that many of these migrants who come here are actually just using us, literally, as a stepping stone to get into Wales.
Many of the migrants coming to New Zealand are coming from very impoverished circumstances, and we represent a land of milk and honey, New Zealand First has long wanted a substantial contraction in the number of migrants coming here, bringing people that we want, not people who need us. And we certainly need to attract those people who can help meet the capital deficit. I mean, the banks were saying the day before yesterday, over the next 30, maybe 50 years, we're going to need $1 trillion worth of capital to make up for our cruddy infrastructure. Now, if we continue to bring the numbers of migrants that are continuing to flow, and like last year we had migrants to the tune of the population of Hamilton, well, that's just unsustainable. And our party is not going to ever agree with that level of infusion at a time where the foundational Kiwis can't even get decent access, not only to services, but the ability to move around in Auckland, and obviously the majority of them tend to wash up in Auckland.
Come on, give us some good news for our people, Shane. We're desperate.
No, come on.
What's something you've been really pushing for that's going to benefit our peeps?
Well, just wait for the budget and the...
The budget
you've got... The 1.2 billion and a substantial amount is going to be dedicated to projects that our whānau and our iwi out in the regions are pushing, mate. But obviously until the pūtea is in the pūkoro, i.e. in the pocket, then we can't boast about it too loudly. But
that would be racist. Listen, if you direct money to Māori initiatives, that will be racist, won't it?
We're empowering and developing the economy. We don't buy into this continual misrepresentation in the media of what we're up to.
Just back to Mātātua. Obviously, there are 10 marae in the Ruatahuna cluster, and grants funding from the PGF for renovations, most welcome. So does that imply that you're working closely with Tūru Taumata on these projects?
No, well, there's some unresolved. You just told me not to talk about negative things. However, I'll take the bait. I will take the bait. Well, there are some unresolved issues between how we work within our Tūhoe Marae Papakāinga and the crowd that now Tamati Kruger and his crowd that are running Tūru Taumata. And as I understand, there's an agreement where they are the avenue, the portal through which the pūtea goes into Tūhoe for housing and whatnot. That's a mad and unsustainable idea, largely because every Tūhoe whānau and landowner has rights, just like any other New Zealander, to have a crack, build a house, start a business, or even encourage their children to go away and serve in the army and possibly serve in hostile environments. None of that ought to be run through the veto process of Tūhoe Runanga. Such an idea defeats and undermines Article 3 of the treaty and actually deprecates the status of individual New Zealand citizens who might be of Tūhoe whakapapa. So I'm not sure what's the legal status of that particular piece of fiction, but I'll be turning my attention to it in the near future.
Tēnā koe. Thank you, Shane. What are you going to do with your pay rise?
Oh, well, that's in a process, obviously, in public and on many days on talkback land, we'd rather MPs work for free.
But I mean, jobs are being slashed. 7-8% of the public service are being marched down the road, and at the same time, politicians have given the nod to allow themselves to get a little pay rise at a time when everything is going up for those of us on Civvy Street, but wages aren't. How can this be justified?
Well, let's just wait until the process is completed, Emma.
Okay.
I can just hear the knives being sharpened.
No. We're just talking through the kaupapa out of the media, Shayla. It's all good. Anyway, you're going to finish up with something really neat for us, something uplifting for Ngāi Māori. What have you got for us today?
Next week, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm going down to Otepoti again, and I'm sitting astride a massive digging machine. And the guy who's guiding me on this digging machine at a gold mine has been working all over the world, and he's from, well, the last time I went there, if it's the same guy, he's from Tainui, and he's been working in Africa and whatnot, so they've invited me to go down there and hopefully get a bar of gold and hold it above my head and swivel around and brandish and flourish it and say to the whānau,
yes,
you too, if you back Matua Shane with mining, can be a gold medal winner.
Oh, beautiful. And
see you, bro.
See you later, Shane. Thanks so much. Meanwhile, Winston will arrive astride a white horse.